weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thank you to Bella da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It's Tuesday the 23rd of July and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, we're live to Paris to hear from our Olympians with our men's sevens rugby side, first to take the field tomorrow. We'll also hear from our boxers and some of our equestrian talent as they begin to arrive in Paris, and Paul Corry is in studio to build us up for Shamrock Rovers' latest challenge on their path to Champions League group stage. If you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or contact us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
On 2FM.
Paul Corry, how are you?
I'm very well, Ruby. I am, I guess, here with you for the next hour, and then I'm going to be racing out to Tala to watch Shamrock Rovers and Sparta Prague, like you mentioned.
Well, hopefully you don't get caught in too much traffic, but before we get into the soccer, breaking news, well, it is breaking, but it's hardly revelationary. Andy Murray is set to retire after the Paris Olympics. The 37-year-old who will be competing at his fifth Olympics, of course won gold at Rio and London in 2012, first competed in Beijing, is set to retire after he competes in Paris. The three-time Grand Slam winner, who won twice at Wimbledon, has been struggling since he returned from a hip injury, but nonetheless, he was one of the big four when at his peak. He was some player, Paul Corry.
Ah, he was unbelievable. He was brilliant, Ruby. But for me, latches on to the other three, I think, a bit too much.
Do you?
Yeah, I think so. Just purely on Grand Slam wins. I think when you look at what the others managed to achieve and the titles that they won, Djokovic 24, Nadal 22, Federer 20, when you have Murray on three, I understand he got to the finals, but surely he has to get over the line to be considered, I guess, really integrated with those other big names.
Possibly, but is that kind of the generation you come along in, were he a bit ahead of them or a bit after them? Would he have won more? Possibly.
Yeah, potentially. And if you look at Alcaraz and the men's game where it is at today, it looks like a much cleaner straight that he's going to have over the next number of years to rack up a number of Grand Slam titles. But for me,
He was the fourth. There's no doubt he was the fourth. But still, to compete in that era.
Yeah.
Takes a bit of doing.
Well, I was looking before we went online. He's $64 million in prize money racked up, so I don't think he's going to mind too much.
Alan Cawley says you're wrong, by the way, but look, I forgot to get to the soccer with him last night, but at least you're in studio tonight, so we can actually talk to someone who knows about it. So
it's actually, now you say it, that Cawley was the one who I heard saying that on the radio last time, because he always goes on, doesn't he, about the four lads at the peak of their powers was, I guess, the peak of the mountain for him from a sporting perspective and competitive nature perspective in tennis. When the four of them were going at it, it was the best to watch. But for me, I don't know. I really like Andy Murray. I like what he stands for, but I think he clings on too much to those other Djokovic and Nadal and Federer.
Well, that's fair enough. He was at the end of the queue anyway. There's no doubt about that. In other news, Pep Guardiola says Kevin De Bruyne is staying at Man City. Hardly surprising, is it?
Well, at the end of the season, he certainly flirted with that move to Saudi Arabia and mentioned that some of the numbers that were on offer there would be actually too good to turn down if it came his way. He is into the last 12 months of his contract at
Man
City.
That's what I mean. If he hangs on now until this time next year, he gets the whole lot, no?
Yeah, what a signing on fee he could potentially get there. And I mean, there's no sign of him slowing down. He's obviously missed a number of games in recent years. He's picked up some really bad injuries with his knee, and I think it was his back as well, which has kept him out for a long period of time. But there was no sign, particularly in the last 6 months of the Premier League season, of De Bruyne slowing down. For me, still one of the best to do it in the Premier League from, I guess, number 10 perspective, playing in those pockets behind the front man. The way he links up, particularly with Haaland, is absolutely superb. His goal contributions are brilliant. His assists, his numbers are brilliant. But just his overall impact on that Man City team can't be underestimated. I'm sure Guardiola is absolutely delighted to have him stay around for next season. And yeah, you would imagine that at some point, if he isn't to finish his career at Man City, that he might go to Saudi Arabia and you know, suck it up for those 2 years and fill his bank balance with, I'd say, crazy numbers.
Yeah, if you can get it, why not take it? Pep also said he's 85, 90, 95%. He kind of went up in numbers as he was saying it. Certain that he's going to have the same squad for next year. Does that surprise you?
Yes and no. I guess a lot of people still look at Man City and the whole financial fair play conundrum that they find themselves in, and maybe their hands are tied with the wages that they're paying out today, and maybe they haven't sold as many players as they have done in recent years to maybe give them a bit of freedom to spend in the transfer market. But they did bring in Savinho from their sister club Girona in Spain, and I was just listening to some of the interviews that were happening today with some of the Man City squad and what Guardiola said about Savinho. I don't think this is going to be a player who's going to be watching from the sideline. This is somebody who's going to have an impact on this team, and maybe he is one that will fly under the radar to begin with, but will grow into that Man City team and could have a huge impact in the final third. Plays in the wing, very direct, gets past players, probably similar to the mould of a Jeremy Docker. But yeah, it is, I guess, you know, when you look back on recent years and the signings that they made, whether it be Haaland, Grealish, they went big on Calvin Phillips as well. They've normally gone with one big marquee signing, but maybe financially, Ruby, they just weren't able to broker a deal this time around.
So does financial fair play then shed a little bit of light on Onana going from Everton to Villa?
Yeah, I mean, Everton are one of those sides who have really struggled in the last number of years when it comes to balancing their books, and Onana has seemed to want out since the end of the season, and it's a surprising one given the fee. I thought he was excellent for Belgium in the Euros just gone by. Physically, he's got everything, you know, he's able to cover the ground, he's big, he's strong, he's able to clean up in front of the back four, but technically he struggled a bit, I think, in an Everton jersey. There's been glimpses of what it is he can do, but he hasn't done it consistently enough for me. But maybe getting in the Aston Villa side, who have really kicked on since Unai Emery has gone in there, maybe he can put a bit more structure, maybe just having better players around him will help him come on to the next level as well. But certainly one where Everton are looking to sell players. Brant Wade has been obviously linked with Manchester United, and in that same sort of region of 50 million, Onana out the door, that probably gives them a bit of breathing room to avoid any sort of points deduction that they might come across next season. But Aston Villa, I know you mentioned there about Man City not spending much. Aston Villa have had a right go at it, Ruby.
But they're Champions League football, aren't they?
They are.
Kind of have to invest if they're going to compete, no?
Yeah, and they sold Diaby to Saudi Arabia, I think it was, for about 50 million as well today, and that certainly helps. But bringing in Matson, they brought in one or two more bodies, and I guess if you are going to try compete again on the Premier League front and be competitive in European football, you're going to have to add bodies to the squad. We saw what happened with Newcastle when they picked up a couple of injuries. They went out of the Champions League early. Their league form suffered as well. Unai Emery is very, very versed with balancing both, I guess, league competitions, particularly when he's been in Spain and going deep in European competitions. So he obviously has a feel of the number of bodies that's needed. He's obviously been working this squad for the last 18 months and sees some gaps. Douglas Luiz went out to Juventus earlier on, so maybe Onana's a good replacement there. But they certainly haven't been shy in spending money over the last two and a half years, and I can imagine their wage bill is right up there with some of the top teams in the Premier League.
Speaking of wage bills, Spurs have allowed Pierre-Emile Højbjerg off to Marseille. Not selling them, just loaning them.
Yeah, I think that was on the cards probably for the last 12 months. Højbjerg hasn't played a lot under Postecoglou, and you know, he's used Papi Sarr and he's used Bissouma in the middle of the park much more, and Skip has played sometimes ahead of Højbjerg as well. He's probably at the stage of his career now where he wants to play. He's either 30 or just below 30 and probably just wants to play in a more consistent basis, and heading out to Marseille will obviously be teaming up with ex-Brighton boss Roberto De Zerbi. And if we saw the football that he played at Brighton and playing through the midfield, maybe Højbjerg thinks that's something that he wants a bit of. But a really good servant, came from Southampton, has seemed to, you know, being one of those players for Tottenham that wears his heart on his sleeve and is full of passion and full of work ethic, and maybe you can't say that about all Tottenham players, but he's certainly done a job while he's been at that club.
Well, when it gets to work ethic, we were supposed to get to the FAI Cup yesterday with Alan Colley, but we ran out of time. Work ethic was kind of something Damien Duff was alluding to after Shells beat Bray Wanderers. Did you read his quotes, hear his quotes?
Yeah, I did, and it smelled to me that it was just Damien Duff looking at maybe what's coming up in the next couple of weeks with the European tie that they have this week. They're obviously at the top of the Premier Division with Derry City, and he just doesn't want any drop off in standards. They've brought in a couple of players. He's going to want to be competitive. I don't think he'll want to come out of the FAI Cup to focus on the league. I don't think he'll want to come out of Europe in order to focus on the league either. So he's going to need the squad to be really, really be at it. And he didn't feel that was the case when they played Bray on the weekend. They obviously went through 1-0 through a Sean Boyd goal, but not happy at all with the performance. Might be a situation, Ruby. I was speaking on the podcast earlier on in the week. listen, the performance wasn't great. I think with the FAI Cup, it's just about getting through the rounds, particularly when you come off the back of a difficult European game. But yeah, they've got a difficult draw in the FAI Cup. They play at home against Galway.
And Galway beat Longford 6-0. It was a rout.
Yeah, it was. And Galway have been going really well in, I mean, even since the beginning of the season. They're a newly promoted side. John Caulfield has done brilliant work there. They're very difficult to play against, Ruby. They play with a low block, they'll frustrate teams, but they have shown a little more in recent weeks and months that when they're in possession of the ball, they're starting to do a bit more. They've had a really good experience and quality to that squad. Greg Cunningham come back from the UK, as well as Jimmy Keohane, and that's the sort of experience that you want to bring in that can maybe see them towards a strong finish in the Premier Division and also really put it up against Shells in the league. Shells have beaten Galway once, Galway have beaten Shells once in the league. That's going to be probably the pick of the bunch from that FAI Cup draw today.
It probably was. Obviously, Bowes dispersed Shamrock Rovers and got themselves a draw away to Kerry. Probably a good draw for Kerry.
I'd say half of Phibsborough have booked to go down to Kerry for that weekend.
That's kind of meant not so much a good draw as in they would have liked the weaker team, but as regards getting the crowd.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Now, I think the allocation to Bowes at this moment is in and around 100 tickets. So there's not a huge amount available for Bowes fans. I only know that because there's a number of season ticket holders in the family, and I'm not sure if that is factually correct, but that's what I've heard. But yeah, it's a brilliant tie for drawing in a crowd if they do want to extend those tickets to Bowes. And Bowes were brilliant. I was in Daily Mail last Friday. It was a really tight game, but it was much more, I guess, what Alan Rance wants to see from his side. Over the next coming weeks, they've been really inconsistent up to date. They brought in Dawson Devoy and Ross Tierney, Ruby, who were at Bowes previously, and they've gone across to the UK. It hasn't really worked out, and they came back. Watching them on Friday, it's amazing what one or two bodies can do to the confidence of the rest of the squad. Dawson Devoy will always look for the ball. He'll try to play forward, and then they've got a bit more quality in Ross Tierney at the top end of the pitch, who brings so much enthusiasm and work rate to his game that it almost rubs off on his teammates. He was the difference on the night. He won the penalty, and that's ultimately what got them over the line. But Bowes, if they can replicate what they did on Friday night, they'll have more than enough to get past Kerry, but they should also pick up a huge number of points over the coming weeks based on what I saw.
Not so bad. Ballyfermot United drew Wexford, or home to Wexford. Cork City, of course, will host Derry City. Jody United versus Wilton United, who are from Cork, where we touched on Shells and Galway. Treaty United play Pike Rovers, which is a Limerick derby. Sligo Rovers versus UCD, and Waterford versus Athlone Town. Is there a big tie in there that you think, yeah, that's interesting?
Out of those games, I mean, UCD can always produce a performance out of somewhere, and they have done in previous years and have caused shocks against Premier Division sides. But just looking through, like, I would expect that Drogheda will go through against Wilton. Treaty and Pike, I won't even take a stab at because I haven't seen enough of either of those sides. Waterford, for me, should go through against Athlone, albeit Athlone are going well in the First Division. Cork and Derry could be an interesting one. Derry have a lot to contend with in the Premier Division. That trip away to Cork City, in distance first and foremost, is going to be a killer for the Derry players, but also given the form that Cork have shown in the First Division to date. They're 15 points clear of Athlone, who are in second place, and they're performing really well, Ruby. Now, I think that's always a difficult game when you go down to Turner's Cross against a Cork side that are in form. They'll bring a big crowd in, and for Derry, they're going to have to be really at it in order to get through that round.
Well, those games will be played on the weekend of the 18th of August, and we'll leave football there for a little while, but we will be going back to talk about Shamrock Rovers later in the show. But we'll be live to our Olympic studio in Paris shortly, and before that, Damien O'Mara has been catching up with some of our Olympians today, starting with Hugo Lennox of the men's rugby seven side ahead of Ireland's first matches against South Africa and Japan tomorrow.
Listen, everyone's here ultimately for business, but it's important to enjoy the experience, and it's important to take in what is a tournament on a completely different scale from anything you'll compete in anywhere else.
Yeah, 100%. The village is a crazy experience, and the Olympics itself is crazy. I think it's excel any expectation I had of it, coming from Tokyo, where everyone had masks on and things like that, to a village with no COVID. It's been an unbelievable experience so far. Yeah,
it's an odd one, isn't it? Because like obviously Tokyo was such a big deal to have qualified and to be there, but ultimately there's almost that sense of having missed the Olympic experience because it was the Tokyo Games. But it's important to take it in but not get distracted by what is, you know, back to regular means games.
100%. I think that's something that being at Tokyo has really helped a lot of the squad. We've so many lads from Tokyo here, and they've kind of felt like they've done that, kind of seeing everything in the village and things like that, which helps us really focus on what we want to focus on and get in for the games.
It's a remarkable level of consistency, though. Like, I think it's 7 of the 12. Like, obviously, there's headlines around players coming back from the 15s, but it just goes to show that the kind of core quality that exists within this squad. And you'd like to think it could be a benefit, that level of consistency in terms of players being in Tokyo, being back in Paris, that it could reap benefit.
100%. Yeah, just the knowledge that we gained from being in Tokyo and going forward, we've 3 more years under our belt as a squad, and the core, that 7 boys, like, I think it'll only stand to us come the matches tomorrow, and it's something we're really looking forward to.
Ultimately, I know it's a bigger tournament in terms of the number of teams that are here, but the format is pretty much identical to what it is you're used to on the regular World Rugby circuit. Can you approach it as just a normal tournament, or do you channel the fact that this is the Olympics and this is the biggest stage that sport maybe has to offer?
No, I think, yeah, you have to channel it and take it as just another tournament, because, as you said, it's the same format, 2 games each day, so take each game as it comes and go from there.
And there's plenty of reason to be confident when we look at the performances over the course of the 7 schedule, that like you're a team that come here justifiably strong in self-belief.
100%. I think we all hold a lot of belief in each other and ourselves, and I think going into these games, I think we're in an extremely strong position, and everyone's fit and ready to go.
I know it's a cliche, but the good start is half the work, and like, you know, you really need to give yourselves a footing in those opening 2 games.
100%, yeah. I think 7s is a game of fine margins, and you really want to try to get off that good start to propel yourself into the quarterfinals and to go from there.
Have you had an opportunity? Presumably you've trained at the Stade de France at this stage. Have you had a chance to have a look at it and know what to expect?
Actually, no. They haven't let any teams on the pitch yet. They've been preparing it, I think, since the World Cup last year. So since then, no one's laid a foot on it. So we're training just outside and looking at it from the outside. But I suppose until we cross that white line, that'll be the first time I've been on the Stade de France.
Is that a factor? Is that an issue? Like, is, you know, can you walk in and be blown away by it when you've seen it's such an iconic venue in the world, or is it ultimately it's a rugby pitch, it's the same size, the ball is the same size, and let's just do what we do?
Yeah, I think we're blessed in today's world that you can get photos of these things and see previous matches. So you've seen it in some sort of aspect before. You haven't obviously lived it, but from that side of things, yeah, same size pitch, same ball, and just same game.
You haven't had any of the 15s in to give you a bit of expertise about what, like, obviously, you know, the 15s team having not been able to get a win in Paris for God knows how many years. Like, it's been such a rich bounty for them in recent years.
Yeah, look, we have Hugo Keenan in the squad with us, and he's been there a few times now, so that'll definitely help us come game time.
From a personal point of view, you must be particularly satisfied with how the year has gone for you.
Look, it's been a great year. I think finishing 2nd in the world as a team, 2 points off Argentina in top place. It's been an incredible season to be a part of, and just think we want to put our best foot forward now come next few days.
How challenging is it to balance everything, though? Because, like, it's, you know, like, I presume careers are on hold and everything else to chase this dream, to try and, you know, put your own stamp on the world and represent Ireland at the highest level.
Yeah, look, a lot of lads working 2 jobs, a lot of them taking career breaks over the last year, last 6 months and things. And I think that just goes to show how hard working this group is and how much they're willing to put aside to be part of the Olympic Games and to put our best foot forward.
Just to finish, like, outside the camp people measure success in medals, maybe rightly or wrongly, and everything else, but it must be a great benefit to you to sit in a team room and look around at a squad that have done what you've done this year, and, you know, you must not just want that first game to bounce around at this stage, such as the level of confidence that must exist.
Yeah, 100%. We just want that first game to come. We've only been in the village probably 4 days or so, and lads are already up the walls waiting to get going, because they just want to get out there and play. There's been enough waiting around. We qualified over a year ago now, and since that day, every one of us have just been focused on getting here and putting on a display for the Irish people. So we're hopping here. We're ready to go.
Against South Africa tomorrow afternoon and Japan in the evening. But Damien O'Mara was a busy man in Paris this afternoon, and he caught up with some of our boxers. So here he is with Tyrone native Jude Gallagher, who fights for Ireland in the featherweight division.
Jude, you've had, 24 hours in Paris at this stage as we chat. Listen, this is Everest. You've got here after all the hard work. How is it feeling to take in the Olympic Village?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's I didn't know what to expect coming in here, but it's definitely much bigger, much better, much larger than anything that I ever thought it would be. So, no, it's great to get here, and I'm soaking it all up at the moment, but in the next couple of days then we'll just focus on competition, but it's great at the moment.
It's important to get that balance right, isn't it? Because, listen, you could have multiple Olympics ahead of you. You never know where life is going to take you, but the balance between what could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and having to focus on the job that's at hand, and that's ultimately the first round of the fight this weekend.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, coming out here, everybody tells you, like, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You know, soak every minute of it up. But at the end of the day, you know, you want to come out here and perform. The job we're out here to do is to box, perform, you know, win fights, win medals. So when the time comes, it's important to flick that switch and tune in and focus. And that's the way I've been looking at it. Like, to be honest, it's good. It's a great event and stuff, and there's a lot going on. But at the end of the day, we're out here to box. You know, it's just another boxing tournament. That's the way I'm thinking of it. So whenever it's time to switch over, I will.
But even just physically to walk in here and to see the scale of the place, like, it does bring home to you just, I won't say how big the Olympic Games are, but how significant an achievement it is in your life to have got to what is the top percentage of people in your sport.
Yeah, like, that's it. I mean, we came in here yesterday, and whenever I got checked into the rooms and sat down a minute and stepped out onto the balcony, you know, and looked up and down sort of the street, to say, I mean, I was sort of like, geez, this is it. You know, we're here now. This is what you work your whole life towards, and, like, you're here now, and you sort of just have to take a moment to yourself and look around and take it in and sort of appreciate it and be thankful for it. Like, but, and, you know, for, again, it's what you worked all your life towards, and, like, at that moment then you're just like, geez, we're here, we know we actually done it, this is it, you know.
And ultimately, like, Ireland has won 35 medals in 100 years of an Olympic participation. 18 of those have come from boxing. Yeah. And you guys and the women here, you're aware of the fact that, you know, you are carrying on this great tradition, and it's not a sense of being weighed down by that, it's a sense of, here's the opportunity to write a fresh chapter in what has been a fantastic story for Irish boxing in the Olympic level.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, boxing, Irish boxing absolutely, you know, dominates at the Olympic Games. So, I mean, we just come here, want to continue on that there tradition, you know, and compete and perform the best we can. And we are, you know, we are a force to be reckoned with. I think the world boxing knows that and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, like, so many talented and great boxers on the team, like, and every single one of us can go on and do great things out here, you know.
It's odd in a way that we talk about Team Ireland, because ultimately you're all athletes who compete in your own sport, and then for whatever, a couple of days every 4 years you get thrown in together. But, like, there is that benefit, if you want it to be, that you can tap into the athletes, you can tap into the rowers, you can tap into whatever sport it is, and take a little bit about what has made them successful to see if it's something you can take into boxing to maybe get that little 1% extra.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, last night, like, you know, we're up on the sort of the chill out area available for the whole team, you know, and we were mixing with all the lads, you know, the rugby lads, rugby women's and stuff, and you know, it's great to actually have an insight to their sport, you know, because we're just always so boxing focused and stuff, you know. So it's good to actually hear other people's stories and how they got here through their qualification and what they do on a day-to-day basis, you know. It's good instead of hearing about boxing all the time. So, no, look, that's what it's all about. It's the games. There's many sports here, many great sports teams here, and it's good to be a part of it, you know.
For some bizarre reason, the Olympics doesn't open until Friday, but the action does commence tomorrow with the Rugby Sevens, and Adrian Eames is also in Paris, and he joins us from the International Broadcasting Centre. Adrian, how are you?
Not too bad. Bonsoir, Ruby. I have to get the French in.
Oh, get it in. Good and early. Yeah. Paris are promising the greenest Olympics everywhere. The beds in the Olympic Village are made from cardboard. The coffee tables are from recycled shuttlecocks. The poops are made from parachute canvas. 6 new stadiums in London, 10 in Rio, only 2 in Paris. 80% of the produce coming from the local agricultural area. The Palace de la Concorde, where the urban sports are, is a vegetarian venue. And Adrian Eames, have you got yourself a bike? Because 60 kilometres, all the venues are connected. 30 kilometres of cycle tracks have been built for this Olympics. Surely you've gotten a bike to get around on.
I'll have to get a bike. After that, I'll have to get a bike. There's no two ways about it. But as you say, it's certainly going to be the greenest of green Olympic Games. Half the carbon footprint, as you say, of London and Rio back in 2016. Just a couple of new buildings made for the Olympic Games, an aquatic centre and an arena to host badminton and rhythmic gymnastics. They're certainly going all out and, you know, they're walking the walk and they're promised that and they're going to deliver on that. So it's going to be a very green Games in Paris in 2024. That's the promise, and certainly the signs are that they're going to deliver on that promise. But the excitement building, of course, Ruby, the Irish beginning to mingle. The Irish teams, of course, the various sports bodies have been here right throughout the last week or so. So the atmosphere is building very, very nicely, and there's a nice buzz around Paris, as you'd expect. 9 million visitors expected over the course of the Olympic Games, and obviously that brings with it for the local authorities the headache of the whole security thing. But that's on one side, but obviously people are very excited about the prospect of the Games getting underway.
And we hope it becomes very green, but Irish green rather than carbon green would be the better way of putting it, Adrian. Obviously the Rugby Sevens is tomorrow afternoon. I'm hoping you're going to the Stade de France.
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see. We have to wait and see whether I'm given the green light to go to the Stade de France. Certainly there'll be RT representatives there. Yeah, it starts tomorrow in earnest, really, for the Irish, because obviously the opening ceremony takes place on Friday. We've got a huge array of Irish in action on Saturday, but for the Sevens, for the men's rugby Sevens, it all starts tomorrow at the Stade de France. Two games. Of course, it's very much crash-bang-wallop. It's all about speed when it comes to rugby Sevens, 7 minutes aside. So they take on, in their initial game, South Africa at 4:30. And then the second game in their pool tomorrow, it's at 8 o'clock against Japan, both games at the Stade de France. And then after that, it's New Zealand on Thursday afternoon. And if they manage to go through to a quarter final, that will take place on Thursday evening. So it's a pretty strong Irish squad. You heard Hugo Lennox there a few moments ago talking about the Irish team and their preparations. They didn't get the opportunity to train at the Stade de France today. Seven of the 12 strong Irish squad were in Tokyo, so they have the experience of that. And of course, they're boosted as well by the availability of Hugo Keane, and that's absolutely huge. James Topping's array of talent, including Hugo Keenan. So that's a big, big plus for the Irish. And of course, in that competition, Fiji will be very, very strong. And of course, here in Paris, they're hoping that their beloved Antoine Dupont can produce some of his magic. Of course, helping Toulouse win the Champions Cup back in May, and such a star of French rugby. But the Irish Rugby Sevens men's team, not without a sniff of getting a medal.
No, but did they get the best of draws? I mean, they seem to have the upper hand in South Africa on form. Same with Japan, but New Zealand have been, they had the upper hand. And should Ireland lose to New Zealand and go through as runner-ups, they could face France and Dupont in the qualifying match.
Yeah, no, that's the concern, obviously. So that game against New Zealand on Thursday is going to be key. Obviously, they have to. South Africa is going to be tricky enough as well. Japan will bring a lot of flair as well. So tomorrow is obviously pivotal. That game against New Zealand is crucial on Thursday evening, and if it brings with it a quarterfinal place. So look, they know what's in store. They know what they have to face. It goes for every team in the pool, but it's a tricky enough assignment for them. But you know. Confident nonetheless, so let's hope for the best. But they are in with a chance of getting a medal, so let's hope for the best.
You're in the International Broadcast Centre, Adrian. Is there many Irish fans? Have you been out and about?
Yeah, it's early yet. I mean, the games in earnest don't start until the weekend, so the Irish will be coming in their droves, I'm sure, over the next few days, family and friends. And obviously, there are people who will go to every Olympic Games because that's their thing. And obviously, from right around the world, the great thing, Ruby, about an event like this, the Olympic Games, as opposed to, say, a European Soccer Championships or a World Cup Finals, is that every nation in the world will be here. They'll have, you know, supporters travelling, they'll have teams here, and it just adds to the cultural mix. And Paris as a city is a very metropolitan city. There's you know, so much culture here and so many competing cultures here in terms of nationalities from all around the world, and you just add in 9 million people from so many different countries, it's going to make it, you know, the atmosphere around the city absolutely electric. So there'll be plenty of Irish there, make no mistake. Obviously plenty of Irish bars in Paris as well, so there'll be plenty of Irish spectators, I'm sure, flocking to those of an evening to have some nice red wine, I would imagine, if not maybe a pint of Guinness or two.
Well, best of luck to them. Why not? When on tour, you should definitely enjoy the trip. I did notice also this afternoon that Snoop Dogg has been added to the Torchbearers list.
Yeah, Yeah, what's that all about, eh?
Well, sure. Yeah, anybody can carry one of those things, Edwin.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg himself, the for those who don't know, the American rapper, he's going to be amongst the torchbearers for the Olympic flame in the final stretch before the opening ceremony on Friday. He's actually going to be doing some work in Paris for NBC, and he's got into sport in a way because he has developed the Snoop Youth Football League. So he's here as a part of the NBC coverage. So that'll be interesting to see Snoop Dogg carrying the Olympic flame in the final few kilometres before the cauldron is lit.
Well, I hope he's able to run. Adrian Eames, thank you so much for taking our call this evening.
I'm off to get my bike, Ruby.
Get the bike, Adrian. I'm telling you, put it down to RTE. Go green. Thanks, Adrian Eames. Enjoy the rest of your evening. We have a quick break to take, but after that, we'll be back with Michael Blake, the chef to keep it a show jumping team.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, if you're listening to last night's show, you would have heard Eoin O'Riordan list equestrian events as one of the sports Ireland could medal in at Paris 2024, and in particular show jumping. And it will be quite the setting with the Palace of Versailles set to host the equestrian events during the Olympics. Before we discuss the show jumping side of things with Michael Blake, the High Performance Director of the Senior Irish Show Jumping Team, let's hear from the eventing discipline and rider Austin O'Connor, who spoke to RTE's Dave Kelly about what will be his fourth Olympic Games.
Austin, the Olympics edging ever closer now, your fourth Games. I understand coming into the Games you've had a pretty hectic schedule.
Yeah, we've been pretty flat out because obviously in this sport, it's not just you, it's you and this horse and 20 other horses at home and hopefully future Olympians. So we've been very, very busy competing, but it's been good and we've had a great run up.
And tell us about the days here before you actually compete in Versailles.
Yeah, so we're here in Jardy. This is our holding camp for 3 days. It's ideal, great facilities here. We're only 20 minutes from the actual Olympic site. So we'll just do a little bit of light training, a little bit of chill out, get plenty of rest, and we go into Versailles tomorrow, Wednesday.
What are your hopes? Do you put expectations or do you set targets for yourself going into Games?
No, lots of other people set targets. Look, the bottom line is, we're here to be competitive. Ultimately, we're going to do our very best. As you know, sport is sport. You know, things have got to run your way. You know, there's 25, 30 competitors in the eventing competition that have the ability of winning a medal. So it's just doing your best on the day and hoping it comes off.
I suppose traditionally the dressage end of things from an Irish point of view wouldn't be the strongest. Is that something that needs to be improved on overall, do you think?
But sure. Everything is to be improved, you know, that's the nature of the beast. You're getting up every morning trying to improve yourself in every discipline. Yeah, we won't be leading the dressage, but we're getting, you know, we've got a great coach now in Tracy Robinson for the last 3 or 4 years. We're getting much, much closer, and, you know, as a squad, we've had a lot of podium finishes over the last 12 months. That doesn't happen if you're bottom of the pile after dressage. So we've made massive inroads, and as I say, we're here to be competitive.
Of course, your most recent Olympic experience is with Colorado Blue. Again, is going to be your horse here in Paris.
Yeah, no, sure, he's an amazing horse. He's got an amazing record. Yeah, so I took him to Tokyo, bit of a last-minute call up there, but ended up finishing 13th individually, and yeah, it was a massive result, and obviously hoping to better that now.
What do you take from your previous experience of Olympic Games into these Games?
I think for me the big thing, you know, psychologically, it's just another competition now.
It's not though, is it?
It's not for you guys and it's not for everybody else, but you know, for, you know, the horse doesn't know it's an Olympic Games, so we've just got to treat it as, you know, another massive competition and sort of park the razzmatazz for 2 or 3 days.
You mentioned razzmatazz. I mean, the venue in Versailles, it's pretty spectacular, isn't it? I mean, I suppose you've got to put that out of your mind, but it's great to be competing in such an arena as you're going to be.
Sure, it's an honour. It's an honour to represent Ireland. It's as close to a home Olympics as we're going to get. And by the sounds of it, yes, it's seriously impressive. But, you know, in racing terms, horses wear blinkers. I'm going to have the invisible blinkers on for a few days here.
That was Austin O'Connor speaking to Dave Kelly earlier today. And now I'm joined by Michael Blake, the chef de keep of the Senior Irish Show Jumping Team. Michael Blake, how are you?
Very well, Ruby. And yourself?
I'm great, thank God. Michael, most people going to the Olympics are getting ready for the grand opening ceremony on Friday night in the River Seine. But it's the day job for you. You're going to Hickstead, I believe.
I am. I suppose there's one ceremony I'm interested in, and I suppose that's on a different day.
That's on a different day, is right. Michael, the closer something gets, the further away it can be. And a bit of bad news today for Bertram Allam and Pacino Amiro. They were the reserve, but unfortunately, they're not the reserves anymore.
No, I mean, I got a call from Bertram there, and obviously he's gutted. I was really, I suppose, surprised because the horse, I suppose, has never jumped less between him getting injured and shows getting cancelled and whatsoever. He arrived really fresh in Aachen and he jumped out of his skin and was looking forward to having him in Paris. And, you know, probably the chances he may have got used during the, you know, his reserve, but after four rounds, you never know what happens. But unfortunately for Bertram, I'm afraid it's not to be.
Can you replace the reserve now, Michael, or does that mean you go with no reserve?
No, we had a list of 12 people, we'll say. And Bertram was one of those 12, but he was named as the P athlete. And then there were non-travelling reserves and other athletes. But, you know, sometimes if you lose a goalie, you have to bring on a goalie. So I went with Dara Kenny in the end because I thought the horse, if we had to use the horse, my logic being that if we had to use the horse, you know, come in cold on day two or day three where it'd be really big, you know, that horse and that rider are very, very experienced, and I went for that option.
Now, logistically, what does that mean for Dara Kenny? I assume Keane O'Connor, Shane Sweetman, Daniel Coyle, they're on a logistical plan for Paris. Where was Dara in the world and how are you getting into Paris?
We were lucky enough. Dara was in, he was actually in Dinard. He was actually himself on a plane to America when the news broke. So I'm afraid I had to, you know, I got him on WhatsApp and I said, you know, when you land, you can have a cup of tea and come back again. Turn around and come back again. So that's what he's doing. And so he'll be back in the morning. The horse was in Dinard and obviously jumped very, very well. And, you know, to be honest, not a bad preparation for going where he's going. The horse is a very, very experienced horse. Jumped clear at the last Olympics. And, you know, if we need him, I know he'll be good.
Yeah, it's always good to have a good backup. Michael, have you been to the Palace of Versailles since they've put in the arena, the stands? I mean, to look at it on the internet, it looks incredible.
I'm afraid I'm with the masses. I've only seen it on the internet, and it does look incredible, and it looks to be an amazing setting. And I suppose we're honoured and lucky to go to a place like that. So I hope we can repay the honour that they have given us and do well.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. It's a three-sided arena. Does that make any much difference? It looks to be a swimming pool at one end to me, or a diving pool or something, whatever else is going to be useful.
No, like our horses are really, really, really experienced. You know, when they spend the winter in Florida with screens everywhere and, you know, go to Ocala, and, you know, they're used to, there was a lake in the middle of the arena in Ocala, and there was a dolphins jumping out of it. Not live dolphins, but they looked like them. So the horses, I suppose, are conditioned for almost anything.
That's always a big help. Look, you kick off on the 1st of August with the team qualifier, three riders to jump. Are you happy with the team you have?
I'm very, very happy with the team I have. Well, obviously, we went to Aachen and Rotterdam were their last outings, and, you know, Keane's horse jumped phenomenal in Aachen. So did Shane's. And then, obviously, Daniel jumped in Rotterdam and he had a small show then in Oman after that. And, you know, the mare is very, very careful, and obviously, we'd like to just give her an easy day out before we ask her for a hard day out.
What way does it work? Top 10 qualify. Do scores carry into the second round?
We're quite lucky that we start again on scratch. 10 teams go through. I was actually talking to the course builder last week, or the assistant course builder, Santi Varelli, who built the last Olympics. You know, for what his thoughts were and his thoughts were on, that it'll be quite technical, maybe not massive, but very, very technical, because obviously with 20 teams there, and I suppose some of the teams, you know, I hope we're not one of them, may struggle. He felt that people could qualify on maybe 12 faults. And then we start on scratch, and your faults would determine, your placing will determine your starting order.
Yeah, so it goes in reverse order. So the team with the worst score will go first on day two. I would be assuming, I don't want to be asking questions you're not comfortable answering, but I am assuming that Keane O'Connor will be your anchor man.
I can tell you now that's going to be the case.
That was pretty obvious, I would say.
I can clarify that one. Yeah. I suppose you heard his last interview in Aachen. Why was he always going last? And one time he wanted to go somewhere else, and he put him somewhere else once, and he wasn't as good as normal. And he said at the press review that I had said, you're going last, Keane, and that he heard me saying under my breath, because you're no good anywhere else, but I'm sure he'd be good everywhere. But, you know, that's a spot that the more pressure he's under, the better he goes. I mean, time and time again, he's got it done, you know.
He has. The team final, of course, will be on the 2nd of August. Michael, when that gets down to the individuals then, obviously, when it's the team environment like a Nations Cup, you'll be huge saying what the riders do. When it gets back into the individual competition, are you still involved in that, or is it each rider for
himself? I'm afraid they're still going to have to put up with me, because I have to decide what three riders will go.
Yes. So you could swap in.
There could be, like, a horse could be a little fatigued, and we could decide that, you know, a rider could be fatigued, and we could decide. You know, obviously, it's not something you want to choose now or even talk too much about, but there is the facility for change after any round.
Which is always a big help. Of the opposition, you've been to all the Nations Cup. Which team are you thinking, ooh, Germans?
Yeah, to be honest, I've been looking at them for a long time, and we've been lucky enough that we've been had their scalp more times this year than they've had ours. And it was especially nice to have their scalp in their own backyard. The Swiss are a good team, but they haven't been as good as we would have. Like, you think the Swiss, the Swedes, the Germans, you know, the Belgians could be all good, but for some reason they haven't been. I'm not wanting to be a bad sport. Hopefully their run of form continues.
Well, sure, that's how you win in sport, isn't it? Michael, you're in Hickstead.
All you have to be doing is better than the other fellow, you know.
That's usually the way it works anyway. So obviously you're in Hickstead this weekend, you'll be at the Olympics. You're not going to be home long when you'll be at the RDS for the Dublin Horse Show. Do you expect any of the Olympic horses to come back to the RDS, or will that be too soon for them?
To be honest, I do, because we've campaigned them really, really lightly. And if the Olympics aren't too hard on them, most of them will be lining out.
That'd be great to see them. Maurice, James, Can, Cruz and Legacy, they would be huge attraction for the RDS.
Yeah.
Obviously, Michael, you won't be there until the eventing is over, and the dressage will be almost complete before you get there. But looking at it as a setting, Forsyth looks some place for a cross-country course.
Oh, it looks amazing. Obviously, I don't know if we're going to get to see any of it, obviously, because we just arrive in on Monday after Hickstead. We have the King George in Hickstead on Sunday evening, so I suppose, you know, we have to do our own jobs, and then we fly then on Monday and arrive Monday afternoon.
Do you stay in the Olympic Village as well, or because you're in Versailles, do you stay out there?
No, we're going to stay in Versailles. I just think our lads, they're used to, you know, I'm trying to keep it more as much as a normal show as they can, that we all stay together and that they don't get distracted in any way.
Walking around looking at superstar athletes and superstar swimmers, you want their mind on.
Yeah, and all them lads is when they're all them other people, when they're winning their medals, having big parties. And my lads, I'm not saying they wouldn't dream of joining in the party. You know that, of course, but I don't want, you know, I want to make sure they get their sleep, they get peace, and they get focused. They can have the party of a lifetime if they can get their job done.
You can indeed, Michael. The world thinks you've got a chance. I most certainly hope you do. Thanks a million for taking our call. Good luck in Hickstead, but more importantly, the best of luck in Paris.
Thanks so much, Ruby. Wishing you all the best. Thank you, Ruby.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So at 8 p.m. in Tala Stadium, Shamrock Rovers will face Sparta Prague. Paul Curry has already told us that he is going there. What can Shamrock Rovers hope for though, Paul?
It's going to be a really tough night, Ruby. I was at the game on Friday when they played Bowes in the FAI Cup. Actually, before I jump into that, never trust WhatsApp group. Bowes allocation will be more than 100 down in Kerry, Ruby.
Will it be more than 200? It will. I was kind of thinking 100 was a bit skimpy, but hey, you're the Bowes man.
Well, Mentown Park only has 1,200. It's a double headed Rose of Trees on that weekend. Anyway, back to Shamrock Rovers.
The game is hardly in the dome.
They weren't great last week when I saw them against Bowes in the FAI Cup. I thought they looked very pedestrian when they're in possession of the ball. I'm just looking at the 11 players that they're starting tonight. It's no surprise to see a couple of changes from that team that played against Bowes. Neil Frugia comes in, as does Trevor Clark, and what that gives them is far more pace and legs and athleticism in wide areas, which was really lacking on Friday night. And Johnny Kenny comes back in the top end of the pitch with Dylan Watts, so you're somewhat relying on those players, I think, Ruby, because I think for the majority of this game, Shamrock Rovers are probably going to be without the ball and probably sitting very deep and trying to protect their goal and ensuring that Sparta Prague don't get too many chances or build up too much of a lead.
Yeah, but look, Sparta Prague obviously got to the last 16 of the Europa League last year. They got the better of Real Betis, Dynamo Zagreb and Galatasaray. They're a quality outfit.
They are, and I was looking out for the winger that actually played for Slovakia, Harrislan, in the Euros against England. He played left wing and he gave Kyle Walker an awful time in that last 16 game. He's actually starting from the bench. I would imagine he's probably come back late from the Euros, but they had the guts of seven players, I think it was, involved in either the Euros or the Copa America. So it's a star-studded Sparta Prague team. There's going to be so much experience of playing at the top end in European football. You mentioned there that they went very deep in the Europa League. I'm sure they're looking at the Champions League and thinking, can they get to the group stages? For Shamrock Rovers, this is a bit of a free hit. They will fall back into the Europa League, and this is certainly going to be the stiffest challenge you would imagine that they're going to face over the course of two legs in their European campaign this year. But on the basis of what we've seen in the league and in the Europa League to date, Shamrock Rovers, I think, will go into this game just slightly worried that if Sparta Prague get an early goal and they control the ball, it could be a very, very long night. But we'll hope. Like, there's still a lot of European experience in that Shamrock Rovers team, but it's been a season, Ruby, for them where they've just been consistently inconsistent.
It looks that way to me, and I'm no expert. Jose Mourinho's back in European action tonight with Fenerbahce. The latest job for him, they face Swiss side Lugano. Fenerbahce, did you ever think Jose Mourinho would end up there?
Probably not, but I'm not sure if you saw any of the clips of when he signed his contract at Fenerbahce and the crowds that greeted him, and you can really feel the love of the game that the Turkish fans have when you see big signings. I actually recall back a number of years, Darius Fasel arriving into Galatasaray, I think it was, and there was 10,000 people there, and Mourinho arriving to Fenerbahce was very similar. He oozes enthusiasm, he oozes passion for the game. I'm sure that would be a lovely marriage between himself and Fenerbahce. But for the coach that he was and the pedigree and the profile that Mourinho has, it's probably a bit of a reflection on where he lies within modern day football. He's not a tier one manager that the top teams go after. He probably does fall into maybe that tier two of a Fenerbahce or teams of that ilk. And it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. Who's to say that they won't qualify for the Champions League, and you see Mourinho producing Mourinho-esque performances and being very difficult to beat. But you would expect that they should have enough over two legs to go past Lugano in that one.
Paul, we haven't long left, but there is soccer at the Olympics as well. Obviously, the ladies' women's competition is an open all-age competition, whereas the men's is under-23s with three overage players. Have you a strong view?
Good question, Ruby. You probably don't stray too far away from the big teams, France, Spain and Argentina. France have brought quite a strong squad, as you can imagine, on home turf. Thierry Henry is heading it up there. Mike Olise, Lacazette as well. Olise's obviously just gone to Bayern Munich for big money from Crystal Palace. They'll have a right go at this competition, as will Spain and as will Argentina. Alvarez from Man City, as Otamendi, who were both involved in the Copa America, will travel for Argentina. But I was looking back at the last Olympic final, which took place between Brazil and Spain, and what you do notice is that there was a number of young faces and players earlier on in their career involved in that game for Spain on that night where they got beaten Brazil. There was about 8 or 9 of that squad involved in the Euros just gone by. So it is a really good platform for the younger generation, particularly given that it's an under-23 competition, to put their name up on lights, and I'm sure you'll see some big performances. But yeah, you probably don't stray away from the big footballing nations that are involved.
No, you probably don't. You usually come to the fore in most spots. Paul, you're going to Tala tonight at Nelson for the rest of the week.
I'll be keeping my eye on Pats and Shells, who will be dipping their toe into European football. Shells playing against Zurich and Pats against a Liechtenstein side who play in the second division of Swiss football. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on, and fingers crossed, because the benchmark for a lot of people is how Irish teams get on in Europe. So fingers crossed they can go well.
Well, you'll hear a lot more about the Shells game tomorrow night, because Shane Dawson is back instead of me. January Winters is up next. Even I hope you enjoyed listening. A big thanks to Ronan Lawler and to you, Paul Curry. Goodbye for now.